Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gutapi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Perdita!
Swangles and Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Rumble, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. We have a new website. Macroaggressions.io is the website. You can go check it out and find out everything related to this show. You can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Instagram. Big thanks to our sponsors. They make this show happen. Chemical Free Body has been with me since the very beginning. They're building the great supplements that actually work. Imagine that. The detox bundle is something you might want to get into for 2024. It's a three-month program. It's Green 85 powdered drink every morning, plus just a handful of capsules. That's it. You're done with the whole thing in 5 minutes. It's really very simple. It actually works. Go to chemicalfreebody.com. There's promo packages like bundles and things like that. Find the detox bundle. Start your year off, man. You change the oil in your car. Change the oil in your body. You know what I mean? Like, get in there and clean it out. If you find something you like over there, use the promo code MACRO for a discount. And also, thanks to the people at Legal Shield. They've been doing this for half a century. In the United States and Canada, they have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and they'll get you access to a high-powered attorney in your area for a very, very reasonable price. How reasonable? Dollar a day, $30 a month. Get you in access to an attorney that has, on average, 22 years of experience. If you are interested in knocking out all of the legal documents that you need right away, I would say do that month one, get your will done, get your power of attorney, financial directive, medical directive, all that stuff. Knock that out immediately. It'll pay itself off for the next 5 years. And then you've got an attorney that you can reach out to if you need it. If you have tickets, speeding tickets, red light camera tickets, all that stuff, send it to your attorney. Let them sort that stuff out. It's time to be proactive instead of being reactive. We're getting into a weird year here, I think. And so to the extent that you can protect yourself, protect your assets, get things sorted out in advance, you'll probably be appreciative of that. So go to the website. They built specifically for us, don'tgetpushedaround.com. You can go there and find information on all their a la carte items too. Identity Shield, small business plan. If you run a small business, if you carry a gun, they have documentation for that as well. It's worth taking a look. Don'tgetpushedaround.com is the place to go. And I'll see you in Mexico, everybody. Or am I going to see everybody in Mexico for an Anarcapulco this year? February 11th through the 16th, 2024, Anarcapulco in Acapulco, Mexico, the largest anarchist conference in the world. I will be the host and MC this year. I'm very excited. I'm going to be busy all week, but if you see me, come say hi, say that you came, I don't know, because you heard the show and you decided to get on a plane and come out there. If not, you can live stream it too. It's going to be a ton of people watching it from all over the place, but anarchapulco.com is the place to go, and the promo code for that is macro. Hope to see you. Worst places to be than Mexico in February. I'm leaving Denver. I'm sure it'll be cold as balls, and I'll be in Acapulco in a couple hours after that, and it'll be 80 degrees and sunny. I've never seen a cloud in Acapulco. I've been there. This will be my fourth year there. Not a single cloud. They don't allow them. They're banned. Our guest is the host of, I'll tell you right now, it's one of the best shows out there. And I'm not just saying that because he's here. I was a fan before I was a friend. Ladies and gentlemen, Frank Valbiero from Quite Frankly. Hello, Frank.
Hello, Charlie. Oh, that's very, very nice of you to say. And I'm so glad we became friends. And I love your show too. And everything. First of all, it's still, you're talking about Anarchapulco.
Yeah.
I still regret that we were not able to actually make a September 11th crossover work when you guys were here in New York. That would have been incredible to have all of you in the studio. And it would have been incredible to go and see the conference too, but I couldn't make it out there either. And I also would like to say, I hope everybody also goes out and makes sure that you start off your new year with your macro aggressions colonic. Make sure you go get the sign up for a colonic, get it done. You can find the promo code on the new macro aggressions website, which I'm looking at right now, since you said it, the IO. And I love these nice, simple websites like this. Everything's just there, not too complex. I try to pare down my website and simplify as much as I can. And this really hits home. This is right in the sweet spot.
Tony Merkel is to thank for that. I told him what I wanted. We worked on this website for a long, long time. We worked on the new logo for like 6 months. And I said, the new logo is sort of like the Banana Republic of America with the banana from the Art Basel banana money laundering art experiment where they duct taped a banana to the white wall. And they're like, $125,000 for this. And then some guy came up and ate the banana. I was like, you know what? This is perfect. This is exactly where we are as a society. We are a banana republic. We are a money laundering institution. And Tony and I were trying to talk to the artist. And I was like, I want it to look punk rock. I want it to look like the flag is kind of ratty and everything. And it took us a while. And I said, I want the website as simple as possible. Like not bare, but just easy to navigate. So for those of you interested, go over and check it out. When we were in New York for that 9/11 event, I really wanted to get up to your studio as well. We weren't able to do it. It wound up being just a lot of moving parts. We were lucky to have dinner after the event. Free World NYC was what we were doing. Billy Ray Valentine put it on. Then we went out to dinner after that down, I don't know New York super well, but like when we came out, Radio City Music Hall was just like right there. So wherever that is, that's where we were. And I had dinner with Don Jeffries and Richard Gage and Tony Erdeburn and Billy Ray Valentine and Gail Gage, of course, Richard's wife. Don Jeffries' son was with us. It was great, man. It was really good. And I was thinking the whole time, like, could we just zip out there and get on a train and get up and still, can I grab, you know, can I wrangle up this group even on a Saturday? And it just didn't work out. But
I knew it would be a tall order. I knew it has to be planned and ahead. Like if it was like you guys were in town the night before the event, we do something like a press junket on the air. And then the next night, to have all that happen in one, I knew it was a tall order, but it was great to know that you guys were so close, a stone's throw away, as they say. But yeah, how's the new year treating you so far? 9 days in, we've got Jewish tunnels in New York City. We've got, how many other things are going on? We've got 10-foot tall Nephilim in Miami. I don't know. I know. Just so much.
God, I don't know. It's 2024 is not disappointing. To start off with reports of 10-foot aliens in a mall in Miami, I was like, man, every time I go to Miami, I see 10-foot tall aliens in the malls there. I mean, the whole place is, have you been to South Beach? Have you been out to South Beach on a Friday night? You'll see all kinds of crazy shit. Usually it's just drag queens, but
literal avatars.
Yeah, every now and then it's a real minotaur, but it's look, I don't know. Where are we going this year? Because everybody is, it's an election year and everyone's a little freaked out about that. Of course, we know we've got an October surprise, which I assume is an economic collapse or a meteor or something. I don't know. Whatever the CIA can figure out. We've got everything financial feels a little wobbly. And boy, I don't know. I mean, you're doing it nightly, right? Every Friday, Monday through Friday. By the way, for those of you that aren't Frankly's, go check out quitefrankly.tv and get on board with it. Watch the first half hour and see what you think. Do that. I don't think that's asking too much. You've watched
just give me 30 minutes
half hour sitcoms in your life, and you got to the end. Why was I watching this? Watch the first half hour of Quite Frankly, and then you see. If you like this show, you're gonna like that show. I can almost guarantee.
And not only that, there's a lot of crossover. And I want to say, you know, you talked about October surprises. I think that we're gonna get an October surprise a couple of times a month. You just saw Michelle Obama. What was the statement she made? Hold on, she said it. I retweeted it yesterday because, of course, it's something that needs a little bit of translating. She said, I'm terrified about what could possibly happen in 2024, which, of course, as you know, means I'm scared to think of what we may have to do to everybody in 2024. And at this point, I just kicked off a 2024 book club season, and the January pick is that 1977 classic Lucifer's Hammer by Larry Niven and what's his name? Who's the second? Hold on.
Right over here. Hold on a second.
Yeah, Larry Niven and Jerry Pournelle. And it's a story about an asteroid that comes. Right. Yeah, asteroid. It's really nicely done so far. We just did the first session last night. And I made the comment. I said, you know, it's funny how every story that we pick for these book clubs finds its way into relevance, no matter how long ago it was written and no matter what the subject matter is. I said, even when you and I did Shoeless Joe last June, you know, it's a story about baseball. It's a story about magic and time travel and reality. But then you start realizing realizing other things about the story. It's about fathers and sons. It's about generations. It's about, fulfilling dreams in life and all that wonderful stuff. It's human. And of course the news cycle is designed to take us away from all of those real human experiences on a consistent enough basis so that the lie, the inhuman machine-like reality that they project onto everybody becomes the most real thing that they know. And so it's incredible. That's what I love about these book clubs. It just tends to relate to everything. But this one over here, I made the comment last night. I said, you know, it kind of feels like there's a Lucifer's Hammer hiding behind every street corner, right behind every street lamp at this point. You just don't know every day what we're going to get pummeled with, especially in a year like this, where even if you're not really invested in what a election is going to provide the country as far as an ability to heal or to turn the ship around, if you really look deeper and deeper into what has the world by the balls, then you know that there's probably very little chance that an American election can do very, very much at this point to turn things around. It's about individuals. It's about local action. It's about voluntarism. And it's about creating parallel systems that could create some kind of a sufficient enough lifeboat for whenever the next phase is jammed down our throats. I don't know. But I think that we're going to get a couple of asteroids this year. That's what it's coming down to, I guess.
It feels like it. That's one of the things I do like about Anarchapulco. It's not all just like, fuck the government, let's yell at these people. There's a lot of people that are like it's a 5-day event. And one of the events, one of the days is like parallel systems. And it's just like, how do we, you know, unschooling, homeschooling, how do you build a garden? How do you get outside of this? How do you get different yeah. residency? How do you get different citizenship? How do you move your money out? How do you open a bank account in a foreign country? How do you get, you know, all that? How do you get, where's the Underground Railroad? You know what I mean? Like all that stuff is discussed. And because you have to have these conversations in advance. You have to have at least some sort of plan. I mean, and the great Terrence McKenna said, if you don't have a plan, you become part of somebody else's plan. And my fear is that we become part of Michelle Obama's plan. You know, well, I'm afraid of, I'm worried about, I'm terrified about what we're going to have to do to these people. What? Who asked you? You're Michelle Obama. You're just married to a guy that was the president. You don't have to do anything. You shouldn't have to be doing anything. What exactly are you talking about? What do you mean? Are you going to have to run? Is she going to run for president?
I don't know. I don't think it's, I don't know. I lean to no, but you just don't, because it's all just a really bad stage play. And, but really what that is for me is it's all the king's horses and all the king's men, including Michelle, goes out there and,
Especially the man part
goes out there with their broad, burly shoulders and says, I'm here to massage a certain worldview. I'm here to preview something for you all. And that's just it. It's, you can call it predictive programming. There's a lot of talk about predictive programming in Hollywood and, you know, Netflix, which of course is very influenced by the Obama camp. But it's just, they like telegraphing. They have to prepare people and they have to try to make the abnormal feel normal, or the abnormal that is completely controlled, meticulously controlled, planned and plotted to make it feel spontaneous and also logical in the way that it rolls out, that it's not, it's not something that has been very, very well planned. That's just really what we have to prepare for all the time. Like, just like people asking me and people like you in 2020. So you think Trump's going to win? I say, well, whether you like him or not, the real question is, can Trump overcome the fraud that's going to be thrown in his way? So when you look at this, it really is just about parallel systems. What do you have to fall back on? And every time we take a look at this, for as much prepping I do with, you know, doing a little stacking here and there, making sure I'm well-armed, making sure that I'm, you know, and abiding by the law in New York, you can only arm yourself with certain things. And there's only very specific ways you can defend your home, but you know, all that, you do all that stuff, you do what you can. So, but you know, when it comes to what real transformation in the world that they're looking for really is all about, it's tough, man. I think the toughest thing is healthcare. That used to be such a point of confidence for someone like me to know that, you know, I don't want to go to a hospital, but if I ever thought something was really, really wrong, it made me feel good to know the quality of care that I can get just, quarter mile away, half a mile away. And that is an experience that a lot of people, especially if you live in a suburb somewhere in the United States, usually grew up feeling that kind of confidence. And then you start realizing what modern medicine really is all about: the hospital systems, the universities that they're tied to, the money that goes into the universities. You learn about the Rockefellers, the money that goes into the pharmaceuticals, or the pharmaceutical companies had such a huge stake in training doctors how to only prescribe their pharmaceuticals. Then we go live through something like 2020, and it really makes you worried. It's like, okay, I can stack a little bit of silver. I can get myself into a little bit of crypto, see what that happens. I can try to move my money around and diversify so that I can shield myself, so I don't have to take too big of a haircut if the system really all comes crashing down, or they roll it into something new, which it seems like they're trying to do. But it's very hard to be your own doctor. And that's the thing that I wish that we had a little bit more developed right now. It's people are trying, but we're really behind the eight ball. And so if you're not living on a farm, and if you haven't been growing your own food for many years already, then there are little ways that you can, little stopgap measures that you can put, you know, having some food, having some water filtration, having some ways of trading with people around, having some skills, you know, being able to have basic first aid at home, setting up triage at home, whatever. But other than that, if you're not already self-sufficient, you're like trying to do a crash course right now in self-sufficiency. And once you start doing that, you realize how many things you have to account for. And it's a little disturbing at times, but I guess it's better late than never, right?
Yeah. It pays to be proactive, but then the more proactive you are, you start to go down there, you realize, oh shit.
I don't have this covered. I don't have that covered. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to skin a squirrel.
Right. You know? Oh yeah. Like, well, son, you're going to have to learn how to eat. You're going to have to shoot and kill and eat what you kill. And you're like, fuck, how do I do that?
Listen, I don't even like
I'm retarded when it comes to, like, people are like, oh, I'll go out there and skin a buck. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll help you, but you're going to need to show me how to do it, because I have no experience in this stuff. So
experience,
you redneck friends.
Charlie, you have no clue how much of a problem I have at this point. If I found a dead squirrel in my backyard, I would have to really breathe through scraping that thing up with a shovel and feeling the weight of it on the other side of the shovel, the dead body, just to be able to throw it away somewhere. That, I mean, you know, I there are certain things that I just don't like. Handling dead things is something I really just don't like doing. And so, because I didn't grow up around it. Don't need to. I spent a lot of time reflecting on where my food comes from. I understand the cycle of life, and I'm not a ninny about that. I eat steak. That's the primary thing I eat throughout the week, steaks. I understand where it comes from. I know what has to be done, but I never had to do that. So aside from, it's an uncomfortable thing for me to have to actually go take the life of an animal myself, and then to have to dress it. I mean, it's... Yeah. You know, we grow up very, very pampered, and at least I do a lot of reflecting on what I don't know how to do and what I just don't have the stomach for at the moment. But if I am starving and if I've got to feed my daughter, I will find a way to get a small little turkey leg off of that damn squirrel. I will find a way to cook that squirrel leg. I'll do it.
Yeah. We might be forced to do this. So, everybody get yourself, you have to assemble like an Avengers style team of people around you. And of course, one of those is going to be a hillbilly of the highest orders. You're going to need one of your friends that is a full blown authentic redneck. He's got to be a part of your group, right?
Yep.
They have magic powers. They know how to do things that they've been blowing stuff up in the woods forever. So they're good at that. I definitely would need one of those guys on my team, because I am lacking in those. If you need a snarky, shit-talking guy to commentate on the apocalypse, I'm probably well-suited for that. If you need me to go out there and skin a deer, you'll starve to death.
People can call,
myself included.
They can call Charlie and Frank if they want to understand why we suddenly have to go and skin deer for ourselves. Yeah, you know, how did we get here? Oh, I can tell you that story decently enough. There are some things I don't know that I'm still trying to figure out. That's why I bring people on my show who specialize in those things, so I can ask them about economic issues that I'm not versed in or whatever. You know, we're the conversationalist. And I think that we, you know, if you ever study human behavior and human civilization, you know that aside from the warrior class and aside from the agricultural industries and classes there, and I mean, everybody suits a role, and there is always a place for storytellers, and there's always a place. We're essentially the scribes of our time, and I'm fine being in that position, but I know that you can't. We're coming into a place, and I don't like being this. A big time doomer, because let's face it, for as bad as we see things are, and as unsustainable as we see things, for example, as spending with reckless abandon, if you know how to balance a checkbook at home, you know that if you act the way that the federal government acts with finances in your house, before very long at all, you're going to lose your house. You're going to lose everything. You know, we can't act the way that we see the government acting over the course of 150 years with money. We can't see it. Well, I mean, it just doesn't work. At the same time, you know, we've been saying, well, the collapse is coming for at least as long as I've been conscious about it. And still, we're still using dollars and somebody out there is keeping it afloat and there's a plan somewhere. So I don't like being like, oh, the doom is coming. But at the same time, I don't see how this can be sustainable. And whereas it's good for us to be the storytellers of our time, the barefoot teller of tales, we also need to be jacks of at least multiple trades, because, you know, I can't talk a steak into cooking. You got to learn how to cook a steak. And that's the challenge of our time, to be able to do what we really thrive in, but also to be able to make sure that we have some skill outside of that, so we're not completely useless.
Yeah. Well, listen, at least we're not being bombed.
I know.
There are places in this world that are just being bombed indiscriminately. So it's, you know, we're very like sheltered here in America, you know, and we're very comfortable. Nobody's coming to blow us up. I mean, except maybe the FBI, but nobody internationally is coming to get us. We're protected by oceans. It's a whole thing. I mean,
we used to be. I mean, you have to. What do you think about the state of the southern border right now? Because that's another thing.
Dude, it's a mess.
Listen, that's something where, again, we can say for the last 25 years, the collapse is coming. How many times has Ron Paul said it? I mean, eventually it's going to be correct. I don't know when the hell that happens. And how many times we said the southern border is so bad? Well, it's gotten to the point where it's not even a border, and we realize that the southern border has been transformed into a delivery unit. It's not that this is not a mistake. When you have over 200,000 American soldiers spread around the world, 30,000 of them jacking themselves off in Germany alone, another tens of thousands in South Korea. I mean, we're talking over 200,000 soldiers spread around the world. And there is an organized, premeditated rape being perpetrated at the southern border by the people who are supposedly, you know, charged with making sure that our borders are secure. You want to talk? Oh yeah, we used to be. You used to be a buffer with the oceans. How the hell are the Chinese and West Africans coming across the southern border by the thousands? It's one thing to say, oh, the Mexicans are invading. It's really not.
No,
it's not. We're talking over 100 countries are bum rushing us right now. And we've got tens of thousands of troops doing nothing in Germany. Well, it's food.
I saw that where in New York City, they were talking about, you know, the migrant influx and people being bused there. And then the school year starting, and they were talking about how difficult it was for teachers. And they said, these teachers are going to have all these extra kids in their class. And, you know, most of them don't speak the language. And sure, maybe the teacher speaks Spanish, and you're like, whoa, whoa, that's just Spanish. There's 20 different languages that are coming in. Do you have a teacher that also speaks Swahili or Afrikaans? I mean, what are we doing here? Because so it feels like, obviously, we know we've talked a lot over the years about the Trilateral Commission. We know that they want to do away with borders. They think that the nation state is outdated. They want it run by some technocratic corporatist model, World Economic Forum style. And so they would very much like for the southern border to go away. And then you've got Blinken having meetings with AMLO a couple months ago, and they're talking about, AMLO says on an interview, oh, I was talking to Anthony Blinken about our shared constitution that we were working on. Everyone's like, oh, that's great. How was lunch? No. What the fuck are you talking about a shared constitution with the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, who's a trilateral, and the president of Mexico talking about a shared constitution between who? the United States and Mexico and Canada? Is this what Aaron Russo was talking about in Freedom to Fascism a million years ago when he said that they were talking about the Amero, the North American merger of the superstate? I mean, when I hear shared constitution and conversations going on with trilaterals and presidents of countries and everything, I mean, that's where my mind goes.
Well, dude,
part of the plan.
You know, of course, how everybody has that membership. The Clintons, Trilateral, and CFR, probably among others. And of course, they have their own clubs too that they run. But aside from the Aaron Russo North American Union prediction and the Umero, the joint currency, and all that stuff, you remember in 2016 when that whole election season was rolling down to a close, we had Hillary Clinton even talking about her dreams of a joint energy grid. You remember that? Joining energy?
A joint energy grid with Canada and Mexico, or just Mexico?
No, just with Mexico. Hold on.
Oh.
We have to.
Because Texas's energy grid is so fantastic.
I know.
And California's is working great, you know, except for when the sun is out.
Okay, let's see here. Clinton in here. October 20th. Oh, it is Canada, too. Here is October 20th, 2016. This is utilitydrive.com. I just grabbed it. Headline, Clinton endorses linking U.S. grid to Mexico and Canada in third presidential debate. This was something that she said that got very little attention. Some people reported on it, obviously. People like you and I were talking about it when we caught it. But, the whole Hillary versus Trump thing was so spectacular in its own right that we just wanted to see people drop the mic on each other. And this stuff like this is getting lost, because you know this is not born from Hillary Clinton's mind.
No,
you know she is an agent of a greater program. And
she admits it. She said that the CFR is, it's good to have the new CFR building so they can tell her what to do.
Yep.
You remember that?
Yes.
So clearly it's not coming from her.
She said, listen, Clinton said that the clip has been taken out of context. She was really referring to trading energy with neighboring countries. If you went on to read the rest of the sentence, I was talking about energy. We trade more energy with our neighbors than we do with the rest of the world combined. I do want us to have an electric grid, an energy system that crosses borders. I think it would be a great benefit to us. So she was talking about not open borders like we have now, but a cross-border energy and everything else. It's like, oh, that's a lot better. That we're going to be sharing an energy grid with. I mean, these are things that get lost. And that's already 8 years ago. It's nuts.
Yeah. Energy self-sufficiency, we've talked about as a nation for a long time. Stop being dependent on others. And what is she wants to make us dependent on others. She wants to intertwine our energy needs with Canada and Mexico. I mean, if you didn't know any better, if you came at this from the angle of like, this lady is trying to actively destroy the United States, I don't think you could do it any better than the way the Clintons have set it up over the years. And now all of a sudden the talk is of Bill and Epstein again, and we've moved into that, and that's no good. But like, you know, the southern border is a huge problem. The Epstein stuff is a fun distraction, also problematic in its own right, but. But boy, man, I don't know. I don't know how much longer we can keep this charade going down along the border of Texas. And I'm in Denver, and they're busing people to Denver now too. They've just basically said to the mayors of Chicago and New York and Denver, here's what you get. You get endless buses showing up because you're a sanctuary city. And now you get to put your money where your mouth is. You said this, you virtue signaled, you got the votes, you patted yourself on the back for being such a compassionate human being. Now you got to pay for it. So I feel disgusted, you know, that they're using human beings as pawns, of course. It's gross. But what do you do if you're Texas, Frank? What do you do if you're Texas and you're like, we just cannot take any more people. We've got to do something with it. And everyone goes, well, then send them back to Mexico. And you go, we can't. Legally, we cannot do that. we're not allowed to, as a state, we can't do it. It's got to be a federal thing. It's a whole, you know, law thing. We'd love to. We have no border security. We have no, like you said, we have 20,000 troops standing around in South Korea playing Pokemon, doing nothing. And nobody, you don't think those people could be, maybe just put a third of them at the southern border. Just stand them there.
You know, have you ever interviewed Chris Ann Hall or anybody constitutional?
No, I've seen her on your show before, though, but I've never talked to her.
You got to get her on your show. And I've talked to her about this in particular, and she's done her own episodes on this on her channels too, about the constitutional duty that these border states actually have to defending the national boundary. Aside from the constitutional duty that they have to their citizens, their individual respective citizens, to defending their state's borders. We have the federal government that is deficient and completely abandoning their post to do one of the very few things that the charter for this country actually compels them to do. There is an obvious bipartisan effort to facilitate an invasion. And it's one of those things where if they are giving up their responsibilities, the border states have got to do something. They have to. I mean, if the problem is the feds, we're not going to get you, maybe you get a good judge somewhere. I don't know. But if we can diagnose this issue correctly and we look at that this is an operation that is completely wanted by whatever is controlling our federal government, then just like the solution to everything else we're talking about with parallel systems is we have to decentralize and we have to take local control. Texas has got to prevent people from coming into their territory. And they've got to be able to dump people back on the Mexico side of the border. They just have to do it. Now, so, I mean, I don't know. They just have to do it. New Mexico has to. Arizona, California has to do it as well. Now, is there the political will? Absolutely not. California is looking to give them, to create some kind of sliver of their already completely overextended state budget to give everybody health benefits, to help migrants transition from one sex to the other even. So, you know, I don't really get, I understood the media value in Ron DeSantis sending 30 illegal aliens that had already found themselves to Florida up to Martha's Vineyard and watch them melt down over there, where they scream, we can't take this. 30 to 50 people show up. We can't take them. My town alone over here in New York has taken on at least 60 to 70,000 people over the last 15 years. Okay. It's incredible what we have going on in my little 2-square-mile town. So it was definitely fun to watch Lily White Martha's Vineyard with all their mimosa swilling idiots out there having their day in some way disrupted and all that attention put on their little island. And within 36 hours had these people shipped off to a nearby Air Force base. And they got to pat themselves on the back for being so humane. That was a nice little moment for the media. But as far as Greg Abbott investing so much in accelerating this process by bringing people from only a couple of miles over the border to 1,000 miles inland where they're not going to stay, you know, they're not going to stay in Denver and New York and Chicago. Nothing's keeping them there. And as you can see, New York already can't provide anything. You think that these migrants that came from Texas to own Eric Adams politically and in the media are going to stay in New York when they realize that they have nothing to do but sleep in tents in Central Park? They're going to leave. They're going to go to Tennessee. They're going to go to Kentucky. I mean, these sanctuary cities, as ridiculous as they are, and they should be dealt with in some way, they're not islands. So I understand you want to be able to make a mark of these mayors and these governors that are completely ridiculous. But at the same time, you know, taking the Cloward Piven approach and helping them accelerate their plans it seems a little silly to me if you actually want to correct the problem, because eventually if you do want to correct the problem, you need to be able to find the resources to take all these people out of the country. So I don't know why you would first spend all that money to put them thousands of miles into the interior. I just don't get it.
I wonder if a different strategy, more of a political strategy, could work for them. If you're somebody like, if you're the Republicans and you're tired of this and you're sitting in Texas and you're thinking, we've got to get these migrants out of here, we'll send them all to New York City, we'll break their system. Like that, they've been doing that. What if the strategy that actually was better was if you were to, and the best strategy is don't let them come in and you don't have to deal with this. And relocating them is not great. But if you did, if you had to relocate them, what about finding swing states with regard to the voting that maybe go red, maybe go blue, and now all of a sudden they're hit with 100,000 immigrants that come in and they definitely go red now because of that, because they, that people go, okay, I was sort of on the fence, but this is nonsense. I don't want this. This one team says they're going to do away with this. This other team says they want to make more of this. I don't like this. And now you're, I don't know, Wisconsin or so. I don't even know what,
how. Well, Wisconsin, you know what, Charlie, to your point, you've already seen community groups in places like Chicago, black community groups in Chicago vowing to turn the city and the state red because, you know, people who are already struggling in certain, especially in lower economic areas, in like lower class areas to lower middle and all that stuff, who are just, you know, trying to get by and dealing with a lot of different issues there. They're seeing so many of these resources being allocated to fresh arrivals from all over the world who have little, so little connection to anything. No, we don't have a very cohesive culture as it is, even for the natives now. But these people don't care about anything. And the fact that they are impeding whatever kind of normalcy that people are having, I definitely see how that has a swing effect, and it does jog people's minds loose. But you know, it just does it does so much harm, especially since you don't know. You're talking about there's no bombs going off, you know, at least we're not getting bombed. You just never know who the hell these people are. You just never know. I mean, there are people out there who would take advantage of that, especially just your run-of-the-mill deviant who just likes raping women, who has no regard for the law, no regard for human decency. There are just a lot of psychos that come over. It doesn't have to just be Hamas or Al-Qaeda. You know, it can just be, there's a reason why there is a strict filtration system that every self-respecting country puts up, and that is their immigration system. It's a filtration device. You know, I'm like, well, the line, people are online for years trying to get in. I don't care. Let them stay out there for 50 years. I don't care. We have no responsibility to let people into this country if we're not doing it right and people aren't assimilating and there isn't a very strict criteria. You're independent. Here's one way that you can make this happen. This is a very anarcho-capitalist way of fixing the problem. Never, ever approve another spending bill. As long as those block grants are just holed up, that there is no money to be spent by anybody. Yeah, oh, the troops, think about the troops. All right, well, you know what? Bring them home. We can use them here anyway.
Yeah,
we can use them here anyway. Because if there's no money in these block grants that are supposed to go to highways and to Medicare and all that stuff, that go to all the states where they have all the discretion in state to use it for that purpose or any other purpose they want, that all that money goes away. All these means-tested programs go away. The first people who are going to self-deport are the immigrants, the so-called immigrants, the illegal aliens. I mean, that's just it. There's a dinner bell that has been rung over here. When they realize there's no food, they'll go back to at least what they know. I mean, that'll happen. That'll happen quickly. There'll be chaos too, but it'd be the cheapest thing to do.
If I had to give a big hat tip to the country of Venezuela, because it was really ingenious what they did. They watched as the CIA tried to regime change them a couple years ago. Remember, we caught their guy, caught our guys and put them on the dock. It was all these like Delta Force guys that got caught, and they kept them. And they recently just did a prisoner trade where they they traded him back. But with that in the back of your mind, knowing that they're trying to regime change you, and then you see what's going on at the southern border. Venezuela just said, we have a new plan. Let's take all the insane asylums and let's take all the prisons and let's empty them out and let's put them on buses and fly them or planes or whatever and get them to the southern border and then say, America wants you. Here you go. You've been set free. Look, it sucks for me being an American, but brilliant on Venezuela. I mean, I had to stand up and applaud that one. Like that's a 2-for-1. You get to destroy your sworn enemy. You get to relieve your country of crazy people and violent rapists. You get to give them as a gift with a big bow on top to your sworn enemy and let them go do their thing over there. I mean, I hated it because obviously it affects me, but from a strategic standpoint, there's going to be more of that, right? I mean, we've done this to so many countries around the world. If you're in some country that's been bombed to smithereens by the United States and you hate us, why wouldn't you? I mean, I think that is the answer to your rhetorical question of like, how did all these West Africans get over here? Well, they were made to come over here, right? Like somebody put them over here. Was it their own government as a way of like, oh, you're going to do this to us? Well, we've got some asymmetrical warfare for you. You want to deal with 100,000 people that you didn't know coming in across your border every month? Maybe more than that. I guess it's 300,000 came across.
It was over 250,000 last year. That last month, yeah.
So, like, if you want to defeat America, you can't defeat them by your air force against their air force, but you certainly can by destroying them from the inside. Is this part of the plot to hollow out and weaken the support columns of the American empire? Because, I mean, it certainly feels like it to me.
Absolutely. And to expand on your point right there again, too, is that me saying that how they all come here. That was just another way of showing that buffer that we had from the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. That doesn't even matter anymore. I mean, we're talking about so much of what is coming over the border right now is a part of an amphibious assault. They've already said, although nobody would ever be able to invade the United States, they have to use more subversive means. And of course, that took only a handful of generations to be able to destroy our culture and to be able to soften us up to vote for our own demise and to accept all be easily distracted while we are being completely replaced by a permanent dependent underclass that does not care about anything, especially Western democratic values. So it's like and at least in the Western hemisphere, because it always harkens back to the fact that this is a global operation. When you have this stuff going on in both hemispheres and you see that this is being coordinated across the entire planet, that should tell you something. At least most of the people, that it's happening in both places. And the fact that they're traversing oceans and landing in the Western hemisphere to make their way up, it's essentially an amphibious assault that they said was not possible, but we're not looking for it. Nobody's looking for it. They're looking for D-Day, on the beaches of Miami. It's not going to happen that way, and it hasn't been happening that way. So they weaponized compassion, and they made people dumb and suicidal, altruistically suicidal. That's how this has all been done.
I had Dan Lyman on. He's the he was the head of InfoWars Europe. He was based in Switzerland for a long time, and I met him this summer. We were discussing the work that he was doing back when he was in Europe, and they had this situation where the Croatian police kept catching these guys, and they all had the same stuff with them. They all had the same debit card. And they were saying, where are you guys getting these cards from? And they said, well, they give them to us. They give them to us. They give us these instructions. They give us the cell phone. They give us the stuff. And he said, well, who? And they said, well, we get them at these checkpoints along the way. So they went and they looked it up, and the credit card is pretty obvious. It was MasterCard, right? And they discovered that it was being financed by Open Society, George Soros, right? So again, this wasn't like a big shock to them, really. They find the debit card. They know that the Soros is involved now. They know that MasterCard is a partner of the World Economic Forum. So they know that they're on the trail. But then they start doing like the equivalent of FOIA requests in these different countries. However, Dan was decided they needed to set up to pull these requests. They did it in a way in which they got additional information. And what they found was all that was correct. But it wasn't just that the debit cards were filled up like you would get a Starbucks card with $20 and then you'd use it and throw it away. These were being reloaded. And the group that was reloading the card turns out was the EU. And they busted them on it. So again, it's not even like mistakes were made or it's a trend or a fad or everybody kind of in one country. It's so coordinated that Soros is involved, MasterCard is involved, and the EU is financing this to make sure that these people have the resources that they need to continue the march. So it's not accidental as we've come to. So we've established that it's premeditated. Now it's just like an investigator, like, okay, who's ordering it and why? Why are they doing this? And is it Clower Piven? Is it to try and overload the system so that you can break it in order to rebuild it into this socialist paradise that these lunatics are dreaming of?
On that front, I was talking with a couple of different friends on their respective shows over the last couple of months. And when that particular story comes up, whenever it does, it makes me feel as if it makes me reconsider the whole UN Blue Helmets invasion, that there was going to be some kind of a big enough of a destabilizing event over here that would warrant the arrival of the peacekeeping force that is the UN to make sure that things don't really devolve into, you know, total chaos. That's always said, well, wait until the Blue Helmets come. I really do believe, especially since there's such a recruiting crisis in the United States and they're trying to purge the army of anybody that has any traditionally American conservative notions of, you know, revering the Constitution, checks and balances. If they vote for anybody other than Democrats, you see this purge in military leadership. You see this merging of our domestic goals with larger global visions, and you see this complete checking out for the upcoming generations physically, that they can't even muster the strength to pass the physical test to get into the army if they wanted to. And then you combine that with the idea that even though the mongrels in the media will tell you that these are women and children that are coming across the border, which they are not, that it is like 70% military age males with no prospects, none whatsoever, barely any skills, barely literate in their own language. You're telling me that eventually when they start talking about pathway to citizenship and all that stuff, there isn't going to be amnesty deals for this majority number of men who have come in that have nothing to trade for any kind of help and any kind of membership in the so-called American dream, than their bodies, their youth, all that, go and fight for the United States Army. And what you have essentially there is an international force that perhaps in another timeline could have been wearing blue helmets, that are just wearing American battle fatigues now. It's just, I mean, I think about that. I think about that all the time. Well, what are they going to do to offer amnesty to people? And they are mostly men that are coming over. I wouldn't be surprised if this is in part a way of making the United States Army into a purely international fighting force and getting away from that whole even traditional rah-rah American way of looking at our military, too. It's at least a theory I've been contemplating and entertaining more and more these days, because, I mean, why even put on the blue helmets. All you need to do is change the costume. And you have plenty of men that are showing up and they're in better shape than we are. So
Dick Durbin talked about that recently. He said, I wonder if we could just make an arrangement. And as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, you didn't just have this thought.
Well, he's, I mean, what did he say?
You're Dick Durbin. You didn't have this original thought. This is
what did
this
he say? Something.
He said that he thought it might be a good idea to trade citizenship in exchange for military service for a lot of these people. And wow. I went, oh, okay. Like, we're all kind of thinking that. I mean, my line in the sand has always been blue helmets. If I see blue helmets, I'm leaving because I know that what happens. I mean, people get rounded up and everything, even like low level guys. It just it creates a scenario in which somebody could shoot at you. Somebody, I'm not too worried about American soldiers shooting Americans. I'm not currently worried.
Well, blue helmets would be way too big of a target for Americans. They That's know. True. That's what I'm saying. That's why this is becoming more and more reasonable to me to just convert this international fighting force of men who have been funded by internationalists to come over here, get into American uniforms. So at least there's not that blue visual triggering agent for the millions of combat veterans that are here ready to pick up arms again.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think your plan is even more diabolical than theirs, because it would be blue helmets without the blue helmets. I mean, it'd be a blue helmet mentality. International people that have no ties to the country, no ties socially, culturally, or anything like that to this country, except they know that they've been told you can be a citizen here after you're done in the army, and so they've got to do it. They're in the army, and everybody that's been in the military knows they don't have to. Flexibility or the right to disobey orders, that stuff gets sorted out real quick. So they're going to do what they're told. The question is, who's telling them what to do? And then, of course, I might not be overly concerned if our previous, say what you want, bloodthirsty military, whatever, but if that previous military was there in place, I might not be overly concerned, because I feel like those guys are so old school, they wouldn't be on board with this. But General Pronouns and General Raytheon, those two guys don't have a problem with this. They're on the team. The General Milley is Team Pronouns. He doesn't give a shit. He'd love for there to be a non-English speaking segment of the army that he could use and Operation Gladio them and create terror Huge. Groups and do all kinds of crazy shit with them.
Think about this. Think if it, because at that point, because they want everybody in this country, especially so balkanized by race and ethnic origin and all that stuff. I mean, you're talking about the United States military would be broken down into little splinter cells. Huge. I mean, you're expecting, would you really expect, what kind of expectation would you have for any of the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who would be offered this trade kind of a deal? Come in and serve in the American military, and we're going to get you on a fast track to citizenship. And you have, of course, people speaking all different types of dialects and languages from all over the world. You would need to be able to create commanding the officers that are fluent in these languages. You have to create new posts. They would probably all be self-governing on their own little ethnic and cultural traditions. It would be such a balkanized army. And then you think about all the special operations we have in places like Africa and the Middle East, to be able to send out our battalions that look a little bit more like the locals out there, as that's on top of all whatever kind of domestic operations are going to be running over here. But it's a complete disaster. It's a complete disaster coming. And I don't know. Maybe 10 years ago, I would be a little bit more. I would hold myself back from talking about that kind of a theory out loud, because it does seem pretty fantastical. But now, again, yeah.
What are we supposed to do? I mean, what conclusions are we supposed to draw from this?
Gotta speculate.
It's obvious. The southern border is welded open. So if it's welded open, I mean, I know it's like one visual representation of one gate in one spot, but it's still, it's sort of like a encapsulation of the whole thing. It's whether it's physically welded open or proverbially welded open, it's open. Southern border is open for a reason. We all see it. Government sees it. Military sees it. Nobody's stopping it. So it's got to be intentional. So the question is, why is it happening? And so it's not unreasonable for us to speculate about these things. Hell, it's the most reasonable thing we can do is to try and figure out, okay, what is this game? And it seems like they could go a couple different ways with it. But the second I heard Dick Durbin talking about that, I went ding, 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 ding. Okay.
I didn't even hear that, but that
fill the military with this, that and you would go, oh, that would never happen because the military is so strict. And then you look and you go, well, you know, lately it has been kind of weird and it has been kind of pronoun-y and it has been vaccine mandates and it has been, you know, Pride Month at the Air Force, and we're going to stand with our transgendered service members. And you watch it and you go, well, none of this stuff really ever happened before. So I guess it is feasible, right? That they're softening up the ideology of the military in advance of something like this coming. I mean, I'm not saying for sure that this is what's going to happen. But if you wanted to integrate a bunch of people from another country into it, you would have to change the current incarnation of the military, right? And that is most definitely happening. So the question is, why are you changing the military so much if not that you're expecting a massive influx? You've got over 70% of Americans are either too stupid, too fat, or have convictions and can't join the military. So you've already eliminated 7 out of 10 people that may have wanted to join. And then there's so many that would have no interest in this. So you're already at a deficit with troops. You've got to replenish them. There's no appetite for it. Nobody wants to really join. Very few people want to. But we've got this other batch over here, and they're military age fighting, man. I know that because they tell me that on my television every single day, 5 times a day. And so you go, well, if these Native Americans can't do the job, maybe we outsource it, right?
Yeah. Listen, everything is getting outsourced. And it's good. It's good stuff. I think it's good stuff, these theories. I think it makes the best sense, than better sense than anything else. Because for anybody I feel bad for people who will look at to think that there are people that exist so much on the surface level of intelligence that they'll listen to Karine Jean-Pierre say that there is no crisis at the border and everything's under control, and they'll believe that. That's really sad. And then there are people underneath who know that there's a problem, but just can't put the, what can be done, and maybe there's a way that we can process people. They're still hopeless, thinking that these people have a right to be here. We just need a better way of processing them all, not wondering why they're showing up, who's doing this, and that it's bipartisan. Like, I don't know how anybody who is still, and I'm a Catholic, anybody who is still donating to Catholic charities is an idiot. These faith-based initiatives are trafficking people in accordance with all the other NGOs and the federal government themselves. I mean, they're at the basis of everything. Stop giving money to Catholic charities. Has nothing to do with the faith. Just please. Little things like that going, you know, there's so many layers of, you know, of understanding. And then once we get down to this layer, it is definitely getting deeper. We're coming toward the bottom of the pool here, the bottom of the swamp. And it makes the most sense. I mean, there's nothing that can explain why the door has been open. It's not even like a door has been welded open. It's a siphon. You ever watch gasoline get siphoned out of one tank into the other? You got to give it a little bit of a suck first, and then once the vacuum effect starts, it just pulls it into the other. It's been transformed. It's not even like a doorway anymore. It's a siphon. They replaced the gate with a siphon, and they're pulling people in and denying it the whole way. and refusing it resources and attacking Texas when they put up razor wire as if it's a humanitarian crisis to put up razor wire to prevent people or to try to dissuade people from not taking the thousands miles trek across the border. Sometimes, the other thing, Charlie, when I see these videos that are supposed to pull at our heartstrings of, you know, families getting reunited after, you know, the fathers and sons being reunited after sending the kid, on his own on that trek across the desert. And now we all have to like, oh, they're finally back together. You abused your child and I've got to be happy for you. All to be able to break into a foreign country and claim squatters' rights? And you don't think that this is the most inauthentic thing that any of us could even conceive of, that you show up and you already have more legal and political representation than people who were born here? I mean, this they, again, weaponize compassion at every turn. At every turn. And for anybody to think that this is just a migration crisis and people are looking for a better life, you're so stupid. I don't even want to talk. I avoid those conversations at all costs. I can't do that to myself anymore.
You imagine being somebody that is like an engineer from India and you're doing all the paperwork that you have to do. You've been working on this for 4 years. You've spent $50,000. You've got immigration attorneys. You've done all these interviews and the process takes forever. And you're watching this and you're going, doing everything I can. I mean, what is the level of, are they trying to create a level of resentment inside the country where it's like, we talked about the Black community in Chicago. They're already resentful. They're already looking at this going, this money was supposed to be for us in our community. Now you're giving it to them and you're telling us to shut up. And you've got AOC doing the same thing in New York saying, not only are we going to take care of these people, we're going to give them jobs too. And everyone's like, boo. And she's like, I don't care what you think. Is this trying to create internal resentment? Resentment of people that have already been here for a long time, people that were born in America towards those that are coming, people that are also trying to immigrate into the country, looking at them going, I'm doing it the right way. You're doing it the wrong way. You're getting treated better than I'll ever get treated. I have to come back for my eighth interview with some dipshit INS agent who doesn't know anything except what he reads on my file. And you know what I mean? So like I can envision a scenario in which everybody is mad at this group that come in. And they use that as sort of the trigger to create the new summer of love or whatever the crisis du jour is, that it'll be the weaponized, the real authentic resentment that people have for what they're seeing going on. They'll take that and they'll say, those people are your enemy. And then they'll say to those people, all those Americans, they hate you because you're here. They hate you for your freedom. And weaponize them and get the and kickstart this whole fight while the rich predator class steals all the silverware.
Wouldn't that be great if this is I mean when you talk about transitions and you talk about these plans, eventually you're going to get to the point where when people realize what kind of a world you want to introduce and what needs to go away in order to make that possible, there is always going to get to the point where the peaceful persuasion and the compromising reaches its limits. And then you just have to start twisting some arms and breaking some elbows. You got to break a few eggs to make an omelet. And even the people who went along to get along for a while there are going to find the spot where they say, I can't do this. Republican versus Democrat be damned. This is, you know, our lives are changed. So there is always going to be a point where people say enough's enough. They may not be able to articulate how or why we got there, but they just know that when they wake up in the morning, the life that they thought they always would have, or at least a basic level of quality of life, is nowhere to be found anymore. And all these strange things are happening around you, and this influx of foreigners are being prioritized in strange fetishistic ways. And there was always going to get to the point where vast amounts of people, there was going to be crossover of support across vast amounts of people and different demographics that never were there. Just because you can't slowly eke our way into a complete reimagining of the world. Eventually, there's just going to have to be a point where you got the animal exactly where you want it. You got to wring its neck. So, I mean, it's just, you have to. So I don't know what happens from here. I also think that we have an advantage in the way that media has been decentralized. We have a far better way of communicating with each other than we ever had in any other time in human history. So I'm always hoping for the best, but I definitely see that we are at a we're at a watershed moment here.
It really does feel like it. Well, for those of you that want to see a different conversation between me and Frank, will you come join us this summer as we bring back the book club, or I come back to the book club? It never really went away. You're still doing the book club, but you and I have agreed to read Ray Bradbury's book, Dandelion Wine.
Can't wait.
I have the book. I have it already. I ordered it as soon as you, the day you said you want to do it. I was like, yeah, let's do it. I know nothing about the book. What do you know anything about the book? What should the audience be expecting this summer? Those that want to go, you got to go to quitefrankly.tv. If you get involved that way, and what it is it's an add-on premium feature for your premium members that happens every Thursday in the month. You tell them.
Here it is.
What we're doing.
Here, Dandelion. Well, first of all, hold on a second. I had this over here. June. I don't know if it's good for you, Charlie, but I saw that Mondays in June would be really good at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Would that be good for you?
Sure.
So in June, I have right now we're doing Lucifer's Hammer for book club. That's on Mondays at 9 p.m. Starting in Easter week, March 25th, and going until the last week in April, I'm doing The Robe, and that's going to be on Mondays at 9 p.m. That'll be with my friend Steve and Jonathan. He's a teacher and a scholar, and I know that he would like that subject matter there too. But then comes June, the summer pick, and Charlie and I had such a great time with Shoeless Joe last year. Like I said, it was a beautifully written a book by W.P. Kinsella. The subject matter is something that we loved because it's the source material for Field of Dreams. So you already kind of know what is where you're going with it. But at the same time, it is, I don't know. It's baseball. Charlie and I love baseball. It's Americana. It's relationship. It was a great pick for the summer. Very easy read. So when June rolled around again, I was suggested by a listener, Dandelion Wine by Ray Bradbury. And of course, you know, I love the idea of going into one of Ray Bradbury's non-dystopian takes because he's such a beautiful writer. And I looked into it. It says one of Ray Bradbury's most personal works, Dandelion Wine from 1957, is an autobiographical novel about a magical but too brief summer of a 12-year-old boy in Greentown, Illinois, which is a fictionalized version of Ray Bradbury's a childhood home. And it's only about 200 some odd pages. And when I thought about just that in general, the remembrances of a brief, beautiful summer from a childhood, I said, okay, this is definitely the June pick. I've seen too much. I know enough about Ray Bradbury's work to know that this is going to be beautifully written. And I have to have Charlie back on with me. No, it felt like Shoeless Joe again, even though it's not baseball related.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. I don't want to fast forward through time. Everything goes by way too quick. But sure, when June does roll around, Charlie, I can't wait.
Me too. I've got it. I'm ready. I enjoyed that. That was such a fun experience. For those of you that are interested, when you you can enjoy, quite frankly, the show for free wherever you want. You can, you know, support his sponsors and do it that way. But for the premium members, there's some fun little things, and this is one of them. And what we do is it's every once a week we give the And Frank gives his audience a certain, okay, we're going to read from this to this chapter to this chapter. Maybe it's from this page to this page. And that's what we're doing for the week. And then I go out and read it. You go out and read it. And the audience reads it. And then the following week, we talk about what we read. And this happens every week for the entire month. And so we break the book up into little bite-sized pieces. We're reading it along with the audience, and then we're discussing it. And then the audience gets involved too, which is so great. And your audience, I like your audience. I'm a little biased because I like your audience because I am in your audience, but I like your audience because I connect with you. The way you deliver information, the way you are, the things that you talk about, the sense of humor, it all works for me. And I think if it works for me, it probably works for the audience. And so I got messages from your audience too. I got messages from people saying, "Hey, I heard you on Frank's show with the book. That was really cool." You know, like, so for those of you interested, take a look, go to quietfrankly.tv, get familiar with Frank's show. Again, I feel sort of like, with the intro to my podcast, it's about 2 minutes. You listen to it and you go, okay, I know if I'm interested in this flavor of insanity or not. If you watch Frank's intro, which doesn't actually start really at the start, it's sort of like a pre-show and the intro, you watch the intro and you go, okay, I know what this is about. I know where we're going. I can get on board with this. So for those of you that are interested, I'd like to send you to Frank. I think you should check out his work.
We have a lot of crossover. We have a lot of crossover, and I know why. And it's, especially once we start doing things together, I think it jives well. And I appreciate your support, man. You know, obviously, anything you need from me, I'm always going to be there for you too. So, thank you.
And Frank, how long have you been doing the show?
This show, this is going to be, or quite frankly, it's going to be 14 years now. I started this up in 2010, but in general, we started live streaming back in 2006 in college. So it was, it's 18 years in general.
Wow. It's a great show. It's worth checking out. If you like Frank, go over and support him and do all that good stuff. If you liked this episode and you think that you have friends or family that might be interested, take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends. If you want to reach out to me, the new website, macroaggressions.io. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.